Hi there, my name is Ana Paula Picasso and you are listening to Blockchain Beat. This episode will be about DeFi and trade finance, a huge opportunity for DeFi that still remains as an untapped market. To talk about that, I invited Alejandro Gutierrez, the COO of DeFactor, a company building the bridge between traditional and decentralized finance.
Provide stability to the DeFi space, but also opening the market to the $1 trillion that are there. Like, as an example, trade finance is a market that has a $1.3 trillion gap. What they are saying right now is, like, a post-COVID, that trade finance gap is going to be between $2 trillion and $5 trillion, right? The traditional institutions are not actually servicing any of that. Why? Because they are not interested. They don't know, in a way, how to assess risk properly in the trade finance space. And that opens a huge possibility for the DeFi space.
We talked about the challenges for DeFi, like scalability and how traditional companies can use DeFi. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you want to know more about DeFactor and Alejandro Gutierrez, I'll put all the links in the description. And don't forget to follow Blockchain Beat in your favorite podcast platform. This episode is brought to you by Blockchain PR. If you want to know more how Blockchain PR can help your business grow, just go to www.blockchainpr.online. Hi, Alejandro.
Hey, Ana Paula, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All good.
I know you're from Colombia, but where are you calling from right now?
So I'm in Dublin, Ireland at the moment.
Oh, wow. Lovely. Love. I really like Dublin.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a while, maybe after the pandemic. Go there. I'm here with Alejandro Gutierrez. He's the CEO of DeFactor. We're going to talk about DeFactor a little bit later on, but this episode will be all about DeFi, decentralized finance. So that's why I invited you, Alejandro.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to Blockchain Beat. Just starting for people that are not too familiar what DeFi is. I know it started, people started to be a little bit more aware of DeFi last year in 2020. But it seems there's lots of happening this year in 2021. Can you give us a little bit of an overview about DeFi right now?
Yeah, definitely. So, well, first of all, it's an exciting space. And as you mentioned, there is so much happening all the time that is difficult to go out with all the developments. But maybe just a starting point would be just to give a bit of a definition, as I see it, of the DeFi. And DeFi for me is the technology, right, that is around this crypto movement to decentralize the access on to funds or to liquidity, right? Meaning that you don't need that central authority that is defining who will have the chance or not to access funds. And for that to happen, you will need investors, and at the same time, you need the lenders. And basically, everything is managed through smart contracts, right? They're kind of defining or putting the set of structures. So in that case, you can pull your funds as an investor, and then you're going to get a return. And on the other side, the lenders will put collateral that usually is crypto, and they will be just extracting those funds and then repaying to the investors, and everybody would be just taking benefits and profits out of that.
Is decentralized liquidity?
Is decentralized liquidity, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's it. As I say, there's not a central authority just controlling who will get access or not. And that's fantastic, and that works well. It opens opportunity for a lot of people that are unbanked and people that will never get access to liquidity if they go into the traditional space. So for example, say there's a protocol that is pretty famous, it's called MakerDAO. MakerDAO, basically you have a couple of, let's say, ETH, or you have some other cryptos that you can lock, and you will get access to liquidity in DAI, that is the cryptocurrency. It's a stable coin that is pegged to the dollar. And then with that DAI, you can just, well, convert it and use fiat, and then you can be repaying. And then when you finish repaying, you can just take those assets and either put it as an investment or just lend again as you need, right? So it's fairly standard. The thing with it at the moment is that everything is based on the crypto space, right? And that's kind of a limitation when you are thinking about, like, we're talking about a $20 billion space at the moment. That's the whole DeFi. But then,
wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it has grown. It has grown dramatically in the last year. But then, if you want to just grow and scale these, well, the crypto space is not enough. You need to just look at some other markets, right? And that's when we go into the real world assets, and that is something that is trending fairly high at the moment. So what does it mean of that? Like, some of the issues that the DeFi space have is the volatility, right? Reason behind, well, the crypto is volatile in nature, and bringing real world assets with, that's kind of the reason why all the big players in the DeFi space start to just getting really, really serious about bringing real world assets. And when I say real world assets, can be real estate, it can be receivables, same voices, it can be goods that are being transported in international commerce, can be art, NFTs. And the idea would be just, as I say, provide stability to the DeFi space, but also opening the market to the $1 trillion that are there. Like, as an example, trade finance is a market that has a $1.3 trillion gap, right? That was pre-COVID. But what they are saying right now is, like, a post-COVID, that trade finance gap is going to be between $2 trillion and $5 trillion, right? And traditional institutions are not actually servicing any of that. Why? Because they are not interested. They don't know, in a way, how to assess risk properly in the trade finance space. And that opens a huge possibility for the DeFi space. Why? Because if you are able to just get a chunk, right, of that gap, you're going to be able to compete directly to the traditional finance. And that's, as I see it personally, will be a good objective for the DeFi space in the next 2 to 5 years, right? Being able to compete directly to the decentralized or the traditional finance and be another alternative of liquidity for a lot of people that they don't have the access at the moment.
So there is a big untapped market in trade finance that DeFi is started to unlock.
Indeed. And there are companies already doing it, which is good to see, right? And not just in the trade finance. Trade finance is just an example out of it.
Right.
But you will have it in lending, in normal lending, you will have it on factoring as well. You're having a lot of asset classes that the traditional finance is not covering everything. So that opens an opportunity for DeFi, right, to just start going into those spaces and provide some liquidity, right, to the people that are needing it the most at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or companies as well, right, because this is just for not just for people, it's for companies.
Not just for individuals, but for enterprises too. Yeah.
Enterprises too, yeah. Anyone, like, look, it's funny enough, because with COVID, there are a lot of companies that, even though they have a good balance sheet, but the fact that they are based in some jurisdictions are hurting them pretty bad to obtain access to liquidity, especially in international commerce. Like one of the things that we have seen from international trade for the last year is that if you are buying from China, that basically everybody's importing goods from China, a container used to be $3,000, let's say, from China to anywhere in the Americas, in a way.
Right.
Now they're paying $10,000 or more, right? Which means that the impact in your liquidity, right, your cash flow is dramatic, right? And if you are not actually adding extra liquidity sources to be able to just to fund your operation, either you're going to sacrifice on the volumes that you are bringing, right, to call for that extra expenditure, or deciding not to do business anymore because from the personal side, it doesn't make any sense for you to just have a healthy cash flow in the company. So when you have those extra sources of liquidity, right, that are going to guarantee you or they're going to support your operation and also increase, right, the volumes, because some of these guys are not needing the funds, or these companies are not needing the funds to actually maintain their operation per se, but also is to grow and scale their businesses, right?
Uh-huh,
and that's another huge opportunity that is right there, just helping those SMEs to scale and be able to compete with big businesses that are around, that have the financial muscle and they have all the backup by the traditional players in the market.
Yeah, yeah. So just on the back what you said about some challenges. So you mentioned liquidity, one of them. Yeah. So what are the other challenges for DeFi right now in that sense?
Look, for what I see on the DeFi space, right, and it's something that we have lived, because personally I have been in this space for the last 18 months. And is how are we going to be able to scale DeFi so traditional companies can use DeFi, right? And I will expand into it. Most of the developments in the DeFi have been on how you extract funds from all these different pools of investors, right? And give it to the end customer. However, for that to happen properly and scale, you need a lot of tools and development that are not there right there. For example, if you are a company that are providing, let's say, trade finance services, you need to pay your customers in fiat, right? Your customers are not going to receive crypto, not yet. Most of the transactions that were happening in fiat, that is basically currency. US dollars or euros or whatever our currency, meaning that if you're a traditional company, you will need to just use a wallet, right? Have an OTC or have an exchange in order to just change from cryptocurrency into fiat, right? If you are not savvy or tech savvy, you don't know much about the crypto, that's straight away a huge roadblock for a traditional company to come into the DeFi space, right? But then you have other components like accounting, because you are now transacting in crypto and fiat, right? You need to digitize your assets as well, meaning that in order for you to be locking those real world assets, you need to just do a digitization of that asset, right? And you need the tool for all these, and managing as well those assets properly. So in that case, you are on top, you have the covenants, you have a lot of components that at the moment traditional companies are not structured or set up for. So yeah, this can work pretty well at a lower scale, but then when you want to use it as a proper alternative source of financing or liquidity for your own company, start to get really tricky. Right. And I think that's where the DeFi space needs to start focusing more and more. It's just how the tools, right, and the UI UX is there to the end customer to be able to scale the use of the DeFi liquidity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think scalability is one of the factors of the DeFi trilemma: scalability, security, and decentralization.
Correct, correct. I think most of the protocols have been doing fantastic jobs doing like all the security, the deep tech, smart contracts. I think all that is advancing pretty quick and is doing really well. However, as I say, like the customer experience, I don't think is there yet, especially for a traditional financial company. I don't think that's in there. And that's where probably the focus needs to start shifting soon if we want to scale the DeFi space.
Talking about what you guys do at DeFactor, also trying to solve some of the challenges or some of the problems of the real world asset originating. Could you tell us why you guys came about the idea of starting DeFactor? And what are the problems you guys wanted to solve?
Probably the easiest way for you to understand how I came with this idea is just telling you a bit of the story.
Yes.
That we have been doing the last 18 months, right? So
please do. We like stories here.
Yeah, we had another company. It's called Console Freight. Console Freight was one of the first real world asset originators around, and we did in 2019 a test project with the guys from MakerDAO. So we met the guys from MakerDAO in a conference in Austria, and starting pitching like what we're doing. They really like it and say, look, we should do a test. We should do a demo just to see how you can use DeFi money just to fund factor invoicing for logistics companies. And that's kind of the beginning for us in the DeFi space. So from there, we went with Centrifuge, that is one of the longest players in the DeFi space, especially on the real world asset. Not sure if you have had a chance to come across with them, but they are a solid company. They have been in the space, so that's a really interesting project. Because basically what they are doing is setting up the whole structure, right, to be able to access liquidity using real world assets, right? So when we're doing this with Console Freight, we're starting to realize, look, this is a fantastic opportunity, right? However, in order for us to scale this, we need to just build technology. It's not possible to just use those funds that we are extracting and make them scale as we want, because the complexity is really high, and operationally it would be a lot of manual input to do it. So last year, we started just getting brains together, and one of the people that we came across paths a long time ago, we started to evolve the idea of DeFactor. And as I say, it's like the idea would be just, let's build that bridge, right, between traditional businesses or traditional financial system and the DeFi, so in that case, we can scale the use of DeFi properly, right? That people can just plug into APIs, into different services and tools that are going to allow them to scale and use DeFi as if they are using normal fiat currency, a normal credit line from a bank or from any other traditional institution. Mm-hmm. So we did that last year. We came together with Ernesto, is my partner at Console Freight, and Vaidev, that is the person that is working as CTO in Console Freight as well. And we created a bigger team, right, that was just focused on providing this middleware that is going to help other companies in the space. What you see happening in the space right now is a huge focus for mm-hmm. the real world assets. But in order for that to happen, we need to just fix how the real world asset originators, meaning those traditional companies, are going to be plugged into the DeFi to extract funds in an easy way and being able to continue developing their operations as they are doing right now. Because if we don't provide that, it's going to be too difficult, or it will be such a roadblock that people will try it. It will try it probably for 6 months, 1 year, but after that they will say like, it's not sustainable, it's not scalable, I can keep going on it.
Right? For like here in Europe, you in Ireland, I'm here in Sweden, the financial sector is pretty stable, it's pretty traditional, but I'm very curious to see how DeFi and how you guys are maybe eyeing Latin America. I know Colombia, Brazil, we have a kind of similar story. There's a big challenge there is for especially small and medium enterprises to get credit, to get money through the traditional institutions. How do you see DeFi and maybe you guys playing a part in some developing countries? Do you guys have any future plans to expand there?
From our point of view, right, like the idea is to help accelerators that are in Latin America. We know pretty well the market with console freight. We have been servicing that market, like Colombia especially is a market that we know and that we service already. So the fact is, if we are allowed or we provide or facilitate, right, more accelerators, not just console freight, multiple accelerators that are already in South America or Latin America, well, what this is going to bring to the South American economy is, or Latin American economy, is a different alternative for accelerators to just get sources of liquidity, either then directly using those funds or multiple users of those accelerators can just channel through the funds that are extracting from DeFi. We see a huge opportunity in Latin America.
I'm very curious to see how that will play out in the next few years. And I wanted to know a little bit about you, your journey. How did you get involved with DeFi? When was the first time you heard about cryptocurrencies?
Yeah.
And so, why did you end up in Ireland?
So my background is I'm an industrial and production engineer, and I did all my minor in logistics and supply chain. My family has been always involved in supply chain and logistics, and I decided to go to Australia actually to do my master's degree. Okay. Supply chain and logistics and transportation and so on. And I spent 11 years in Australia working mainly as a consultant, doing everything you can imagine from the supply chain management point of view, supply chain finance, procurement, and strategic consulting, right? So when I was in Australia, the first contact that I had when I was in Australia was I remember a friend sent me information about Bitcoin.
Which year was that?
That was probably in 2015,
2014. Okay, okay.
So it was early-ish, right? Mm-hmm. And with my friend, we would say, okay, let's get some of these Bitcoin things just to see what it is. And at that point, Australia was so difficult actually to get access that we never did it. We never did it at that point. We ended up going to a friend's
wedding. When it was $100, no.
Ah, yeah, it would be, yeah. Well, unfortunately, we didn't get it. And we ended up in our friend's wedding in India, and we spent all the money. So we came back, it's like, there's no money anymore. And then in 2017, I relocated from Australia into Ireland. Why? Because my wife is Irish, so Irish needs to be close to the family. And when I was here, well, before living in Australia, I was starting getting more and more interested about blockchain from the traceability point of view, because I realized that one of the key components in supply chains is visibility and traceability.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a big market for blockchain.
Exactly. And one of the main reasons why supply chains actually collapse or fail is because of lack of visibility. So I started just checking. And then when I moved in here, I started working with a company that's called the Happy Pair. And this company, I was setting up all the supply chain for them. And this company is pretty big into the vegan sector, but also sustainability and social responsibility. So I started just getting pretty close to different solutions on the sustainability point of view and the traceability, because that would help actually just to create a little bit more consciousness about the brand and the customers to be more comfortable, right? Because like the appeal of this brand actually is, as I say, like, it's clean food, that there is a social consciousness behind, and people really appreciate that. So when I was in that journey, right, I remember I came out with like protocols that were like one of the first movers into the space, like Ambrosius and some other ones that I don't know if they exist or not. But then when I finished with them, I had already a really real desire to just work in blockchain, right? So I knew like I want to do something in the blockchain space. And it came the opportunity just to join Console Freight, right? That is the accelerator that I was mentioning before. We started seeing that digitization of the supply chain is a critical component, and especially in the logistic area. But we realized the main and the most critical problem in the logistic and the international commerce is actually the access to liquidity. Why? Because most of the companies that are providing logistics services require a huge liquidity pool in order to be able to transact. And the same for people involved in international commerce. If you're a buyer, you're a seller, usually what happens is there is a container with goods that is going to be trapped in the middle of the ocean with no purpose for any of the parties. So what we realize is, look, if we are able to put those goods that are trapped in the middle of the container, in the middle of the ocean, if we make that work financially for both parties that are involved, well, that's going to be a really good way to provide fuel, right, the international commerce around the world. And that's what we did. And the only way that we were able actually to put that to completion was using DeFi money, because the traditional parties were not open to our idea, as one was too small, or they couldn't understand the way that we're mitigating risk, because we are mitigating risk in a completely different way. We are not just looking at the balance sheet between the people that are transacting. We're just looking at the whole supply chain holistically and see where are the different points in which risk, or the different points in which there is high risk, and how are we mitigating that. And using the goods that are trapped in that container as collateral, meaning that something happens, we still have the goods. I think from our perspective, better to have goods in most of the cases than actually have an invoice. An invoice is pretty liquid. However, you can end up with an invoice and end up in court for ages, and you just lose half of that value. When we started just, as I say, like we started just using DeFi money, right? And this is how I started getting involved into the DeFi and now into the real world asset origination, or using real world as collateral to be just extracting funds from the DeFi space. So in the space of 18 months, that is when we're starting, the DeFi space has changed so much, right? But also you're still seeing some signs of maturity, like, for example, just starting to explore what is out there. Let's not just stay in the crypto bubble, let's just see what is out there, how we can just make this a bit more robust and be more accessible to absolutely everybody, even though the first user would be people in the crypto. But let's see how we can amplify the message and say, look, there are alternatives for liquidity. There are chances for people that are not bank at the moment.
Yeah.
There are alternatives for people that are not covered from loans point of view, from trade finance point of view, from education point of view. So that's kind of the next stage.
Latin America. Sorry. Let's say people from Latin America.
Oh, yeah. No, and from Africa and from Asia. And even you will be fine. You will be surprised to see that there are companies in Europe and America that even though they are in what I call the first world countries, they still are not bank, right? Because they are small, because sometimes they have issues with the credit history. And they can take as well a good source of, oh, they can take this opportunity as well to improve the conditions that they have at the moment.
Yeah, so definitely. So it's very interesting, your journey, Alejandro, from supply chain, which is a big market as well for blockchain application, and then you move. And you guys saw an opportunity, you saw the problem, and you saw the opportunity in DeFi to solve the problem within the real world asset origination. Yeah, so that's is that how DeFactor came about?
Yeah, that's exactly working on or getting our hands dead into the DeFi space and seeing that even though this opportunity is fantastic, we need to do something to make it scalable, because if not, it's going to be just a hype word that is going to last for a couple of years and disappear. And personally, I would feel extremely heartbroken or have felt if that's what is going to happen with the DeFi, because we believe the opportunity is huge, and the chances to actually make real people, real companies' life way better is there, and we just need to make it a little bit more user friendly and provide the tools for people to just be able to transact with the DeFi as they are doing normally with the traditional financial system. So that's exactly what DeFactor wants to do.
Yeah, and it seems to be doing really well. You just had a big round on investment a couple of weeks ago.
That's correct. Yeah, we did.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we had our token sale and went extremely well. We raised the soft cap within 2 weeks, and now we are just heading into hitting the hard cap, and we're hoping that August will be with the milestone and just have a proper launch for our token and so on. As that's this hinting, right? The fact that we have a token means that we want to have a community. We have a decentralized, or want, or our aim or our goal is to have a decentralized.
Your token, your token is the Factor token.
It's called the Factor token. Yeah, Factor. That's correct.
FACTR. Yeah. So if anyone wants to know more about DeFactor, I'll put all the links in the description. And if people want to reach out directly to you, Alejandro, how do they do it? Can they just reach you through LinkedIn?
Yeah, they can reach me through LinkedIn. They can reach through Twitter as well.
Okay. And then thank you very much, Alejandro. I think it was really nice, your overview you gave about the challenges, the problems, and what you guys trying to solve at DeFactor, with DeFactor. And good luck to everything.
No, thank you very much, Ana Paula, for the invitation. It was really good to chat about DeFi. And
thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks.